Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
On episode 348 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn 9 double strategy lessons from tri-level nationals.
Welcome to the Tennis Files podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshah.
Hey there, and welcome to another podcast episode. Really glad that you're listening in. And today I have a pretty fun one, where I went to watch tri-level nationals. So kind of a funny story, but essentially I was on a super tri men's team that made it to nationals, but unfortunately it didn't work out for me to actually play during the season. So I was not qualified to play, but I had a bunch of friends who ended up going on the men's and women's teams. A lot of 5-0 men and women that I play, you know, men's and mixed with. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to go out there, enjoy myself, and watch some good tennis as well. Who doesn't want to go to California in the winter time, right? So I decided to go, and I have to give big ups, as they say in England, to a bunch of our teams there. I followed the regular tri, which is 3-5, 4-0, 4-5, and then the super tri teams, which are 4-0, 4-5, 5-0. And so, if I'm remembering this correctly, the women's regular try that goes up to 4-5, they won it. So, congrats to them. And this is Mid-Atlantic section, by the way, if you don't know where I'm at. And then the men regular try up to 4-5 got second place. The women's super try, which I ended up actually watching the most, and they made a shirt for me, which was so nice. Bon Bons, a nice nickname there. They ended up getting second very narrowly. Oh, man, it was tough, but really good tennis. And then the men, they were depleted as well and didn't manage to get out of their group, but, you know, they still did well. And, you know, super try nationals out there, it was tough for them, but, you know, they battled. But, yeah, we're going to focus on the super try women. So, as I said, they got second place, and super tri-level nationals was in San Diego. It was really cool, too. I saw a couple folks that recognized me from the podcast and came up to me from different sections, so that was really, really cool. And yeah, so the women's super tri team actually only had 7 players total for the 3 courts, so that's pretty dang sparse. They only had 2 4-0s, 2 4-5s, and then 3 5-0s. And they ended up going 1-1 after the first day. So what happens is, you know, that's you play 4 matches, and then the 4 teams with the best 4 records advance to the semis. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, they went 1-1 the first day, and I'm trying to remember exactly who they played. I just remember that they'd won the first match, and then they played a really tough Midwest team and had lost to them, and then they won their 2 matches the next day to get to 3-1, which is really, really big. And so they qualified for the semis, and then they played Midwest, which they lost to, as I mentioned, and they actually beat them in the semis 2-1. And so that was really nice for the team to get a win over them after they had lost against them. And then the team played Northern Cal, who they had beat in the morning of the second day, and they won the 5-0 court, but then unfortunately they lost the 4-0 court and lost the 4-5 court in the second set tiebreaker, 8-6. So really tense stuff. So I wanted to give you the background just because it's really interesting, you know, obviously to hear about what goes on in these national tournaments. You know, a lot of us are just nuts for going to postseason, and, you know, nationals get to take a nice trip, play some tennis, meet some new folks, and compete hard and whatnot. But I watched pretty much, Yeah, I would say exclusively 5-0 women's, but also some 4-5 and some 4-0 as well. And then kind of wandered around and saw some men's 5-0 and men's 4-5, but women's 4-5 as well. But let's talk about the 9 double strategy lessons that I learned from tri-level nationals. And I'm basing this on 5-0 women's, but this applies to, you know, a lot of different levels, most of these strategies. So the first one is that virtually all the points were one up, one back. So the first strategy is that deep ground strokes that set up the partner for a volley were just so unbelievably important. The points would just pretty much mostly go like this, where, you know, you have two baseline players battling, just hitting heavy ground strokes. And then eventually, you know, one player would hit a deep enough ground stroke to where the opponent, you know, was in trouble and, you know, ended up not being able to hit as good of a reply. And so the net players, you know, very keen to pick that off. And so that's what happened. I just watched over and over again, you know, bam, 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 deep, you know, deep enough ground stroke with good power. And then the net player anticipates a weaker cross court and pounces. So I think that's one thing that's just a reality. USDA doubles that you're going to have one back, one up for both sides. And so if you can, you know, act essentially as, you know, the, what do you call it in volleyball, where, you know, you set your partner up for the spike, right? So you're just focusing on hitting solid deep ground stroke. Eventually your partner has to try to figure out, okay, I think that my opponent is going to be off balance here, or they're going to, you know, have a tough time handling this ball, and I'm going to be able to coach on this, put it away, or, you know, just hit it to the net side. You know, very tough for the opponent to, you know, whip down the line off of a tough deep ground stroke. And, you know, they did it sometimes in 5-0 where they would just whack these crazy down the line winners, but that's really hard to do. So that first strategy of focusing on the deep ground strokes to set your partner up. You have to end the point when you're at the baseline, you set them up. So second strategy that I saw that was very prevalent, which I kind of alluded to, was being able to, as a net player, anticipate when to poach. And, you know, the most successful teams I found had at least, you know, had one player who was great at the baseline, and then the other player was just really good at net. And, you know, that obviously makes for a great pair. And that really astute net player was just able to know, like, you know, all right, this is the situation. My opponent is stretched wide. They're in an uncomfortable position, or they have their racket face open for a slice, or, yeah, like I mentioned, the deep ground stroke, and this is the time to make the move. And also, I did notice that the better net players had kind of the triangular movement pattern where, you know, you're moving when you're in an offensive position, you're kind of moving up, you know, you are moving up, not kind of, and positioning yourself to be able to, you know, hit a more offensive volley. But then when the other team is hitting the ball at you, you know, and it's going toward your partner, then you're kind of backing up, so giving yourself more space to, you know, play some defense if needed. The third strategy is that tennis is a game of errors. So, you know, I just noticed, I mean, it seems obvious, right? But, you know, one example I can think of is that our 5-0 ladies, shout out to Kate and Ashley, and also Angel as well. Kate and Ashley, they had an incredible tiebreaker, where a third set tiebreak in the morning versus Northern California, such a tough team who, you know, they ended up losing to in the finals. But in the third match, was it Saturday morning, I think, they just steamrolled the tiebreak. And they steamrolled because they didn't make any errors. They maybe made one error in the whole tiebreak, but otherwise, they were so solid. They were not doing anything amazing at all. They were just making their shots, you know, hitting good balls that couldn't be picked off, and then just biding their time. And then, you know, when they had the volley, they would make the volley, you know, hit it high percentage area at the net opponent. And as we all know, I mean, it's worth repeating. I'm sure you've, you know, if you listen to this show, you've heard it, but somewhere around like 70-ish percentage of points end in the first four shots. right? So this is like real data taken from tons of professional matches, but also data was taken in amateur matches as well. This is kind of the Craig O'Shaughnessy, like he's the one who's, you know, first mentioned, at least that where I first heard it from. And so when you think about it like that, obviously, you know, you just want to really play solid and you don't need to do anything crazy. And yeah, just reducing the errors is going to win you the match. So of course, you know, within the first four shots, if you're able to make those first four, then you have a much better chance of winning. And think about it, you know, in doubles especially, it's a lot of, you know, serve, return error, or serve, return, net player puts the volley away, or, you know, serve, return, and then error from the plus one. So yeah, just want to keep that in mind. The fourth strategy is at first serve percentage, and this was very apparent because in that second match where the 5-0 ladies played against the strong Midwest team that they lost to but then later beat, the first serve percentage from Ashley, I mean, such a great player. I don't mean to like call her out or anything at all because she played amazing and so did Kate. But like Ashley's first serve percentage in that match was really, really low. And so it's a wild match actually. They ended up going down 4-0 in the first set. Then they came back to 4-4. Then they lost 6-4. And then they went up 4-1 in the second set. And then they ended up losing that one's 6-4, I believe. So that was just crazy. But in that match, Ashley's first serve percentage was so low and she got broken a few times. And, you know, she was of the two players, you know, the one where like you can really rely on her serve. She has a great serve. And, you know, if she's getting broken, then you're in big trouble, which proved to be the case. Then you compare that with when she played her next match, really all the other matches, first serve percentage was way higher and she held. And, you know, with NorCal, that was the case like the second time around, or I'm sorry, against Midwest the second time around. And, you know, her and Kate won. So, you know, the thing was, if you have a low first serve percentage, then, you know, automatically the opponent, you know, that's how we all think, right? Like first serve, okay, like kind of the goal mainly is to get it back in the court, make solid contact. But the second serve often, unless you're playing really high level, like super high level really, where the second serves are massive, you know, the mindset on the second serve is usually something like, well, I'm going to really look to punish the second serve in these higher levels. So, you know, when you get more first serves in, then you reduce those instances of your opponent being more confident and being able to swing out, and that's definitely what you want. So, yeah, I will say again, like maybe at like the 2-5, 3-0, 3-5, and some 4-0 levels, okay, like the first serve percentage isn't as huge of a, you know, importance, because sometimes you're seeing players hitting, you know, just slower serves for both serves, so it's not like as big, but still, first serve percentage is great. If you know, the higher it is, the better, generally speaking, you're going to do.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Strategy number 5 is adjusting your formation and your strategies. This is really important because if you just stay static in the same formation over and over again, you let your opponents get a rhythm. At the very least, you need to be doing some fake poaching, some actual poaching, things like that. And, you know, more advanced would be using I formation, net player, you know, in the middle of the court, calling where he or she is going to go and also where the serve should go. Usually I reverse that order and like serve location first, followed by which side I'm going for the I formation. For Aussie, obviously, you know, you're just having your partner, net partner, stay on the same side as where you're serving, and then you're the one who shifts over to that other side, that open court. But yeah, this was really huge. And in particular, I remember when Kate was serving and she likes the Aussie formation on the ad side, which is really great, and I use it too. But her and Ashley found out that, you know, the returner was just ripping the return. I think it was usually her backhand return right at Ashley at the net, and they just weren't having success. So a bit later on, they changed the formation to go to regular formation, and that worked out way better. So just proving, you know, how important it is to adjust your strategy and formations if it's not working out. I mean, obviously it's different if it's an execution issue. Maybe you have a great strategy, but you're just not making the shots. So then you don't necessarily need to adjust the strategy. You just need to execute better. But in this case, it was clearly the formation that just wasn't working at that time. But usually it's kind of the reverse, where you know, your regular formation is what is being exploited and then you want to change. But, you know, whatever it is that's happening, you got to try and adjust if needed. And so, yeah, that's just, you know, one highlight there, but definitely encourage you to mix up your formations, your serve locations, all these things. Of course, you know, no need to mix up the serve location if you're just really being successful, but to keep the returners off their toes, I think mixing it up is great. And a lot of body serves too. That way you can, you know, it's very hard for players to hit a good return off a body serve. And this is more paramount in doubles, because then it's very hard for the returner to hit a precise cross court shot away from the net player. So the net player can be looking to pounce on the return, especially when it's a body serve. Number six is to not be tentative. So when watching the 5-0 match against NorCal, I believe this was the ridiculous tiebreak where they went up 10-1 or won 10-1, third set tiebreaker. And actually it talked to them and asked, you know, Kate and Ashley, like, what do you think was the secret or, you know, the key for you winning? And Kate had actually said that they had to swing out and be aggressive versus North Cal or they would have lost. And this is really key. I remember years ago when I was still trying to, you know, figure out how to play doubles optimally. I guess we still all are, right? But I was definitely more tentative at that point, just kind of thinking more about being consistent to the point where I was kind of like not, you know, fully, I mean, I was fully swinging, but I was just being tentative with my strokes and feeling a bit tight. And that can be taken advantage of very easily. You know, then you're going to give your opponents the latitude to start being more aggressive and pressuring you. And then they're also going to get a lot more shots, weaker shots from you to put away at net. And so just, you know, a lot of times you have to be brave and think about, okay, this is the strategy that I need to execute to win. And I'm going to fearlessly just execute it as much as I can. And, you know, when you focus on the process of execution and not the results of what the score is or will be as much as possible, that's when you're going to be successful. And so, yeah, I thought that was really cool to hear, you know, that, hey, we had to swing out. We had to play aggressive or we would lose. And they played aggressive and reaped the rewards. Strategy number seven is testing the active net players down the line. So you definitely should at least occasionally hit down the line against an aggressive mover so that they think twice about poaching, because they're making you think twice about whether they're going to poach against you. So definitely, you know, I was playing, men's doubles a couple of days ago. And, you know, one of the net players just like loves to move almost every time. And so, you know, hit a few down the line, make them think. So next time, you know, they're the ones who's hesitating, thinking, all right, you know, maybe I should stay now because the person goes down the line. And, you know, I felt the same you know, with me, like when I'm at the net, I'm aggressive, right? I try to be. And, you know, players that hit down the line against me, then I think, you know what? Maybe I should be camping out here. It's a little dangerous. So definitely want to just not let yourself be exploited by active net players down the line, or, you know, lob, hit Adam. Totally fair. Fair game. Strategy number 8 that I learned at Tri-Level Nationals is to not swing too big. I almost said bigly. Do not swing too big on volleys. So it definitely, you know, lots of times you get these floating shots, or maybe you get like a regular pace shot, but it's like right in your volley strike zone and you think, I'm going to destroy this. And you end up taking too big of a swing and then you make an error. So, you know, I told Kate this whenever she missed a volley, it was because she had too big of a backswing. And I see this with a lot of players. Sometimes I make this mistake as well. And, you know, again, it's tempting because you think you can just crush the ball, but it's better to lean on the side of having a more compact take back, and so that, you know, you can just have that and then volley at the net player, super high percentage, and you're going to make more volleys. You're going to make better contact. So definitely something just to think about. You know, if you're ending up missing a lot of volleys, definitely want to videotape yourself. Just put your phone on a tripod, or even have somebody just videotape you volleying and just kind of see, you know, you may actually be taking too big of a backswing. And I have this similar issue on return sometimes, where I actively tell myself to just take a shorter take back. It just helps. You know, we're not all like Medvedev, where we can just take these, you know, 3 full circle swings, back swings or whatever he's doing, like an octopus, and still have amazing contact. You know, I know he's playing like 8 times a week or whatever, but getting the rhythm as well, which most of us can't do. The 9th and last double strategy learned from Tri-Level Nationals is how important footwork really is. In one of the matches, I noticed the 5-0 ladies were missing shots simply because their footwork was a bit slow. Maybe they were tired from the previous day's matches, 2 a day, intense ones. But really is the key, footwork intensity and efficiency is, because that's going to allow you to get in position to hit the ball optimally. It's going to allow you to dig out a lot of balls that are far away. And yeah, it's one thing that when we get nervous tends to go away. And so I personally have to remind myself, like, you know what, pick up the footwork intensity. And I think that's really more important than like the focusing on the technique of, like, you know, where your arm is, like what angle it is, this and that. Obviously, okay, like it is, you know, makes a big difference. And I cover that in the summit that's coming up in April 22nd, by the way, kickoff live stream on the 21st. But, you know, that being said, as I tell a lot of, you know, colleagues and players, if you're unable to get in position in the first place, what good is perfect technique going to do you? You're going to be unbalanced. You're not going to be able to execute the perfect technique because the ball is going to be at your shoelaces, for example. So definitely footwork is huge. And also, I really can tell the level of the player by the footwork. Like it really does tell the tale. You know, when you see somebody and they're like, you know, 3.0, 3.5, which, you know, again, like no worries, like great level, but you compare their footwork alone with the 4.5, 5.0 players, that you'll see the difference right there. So yeah, footwork intensity and efficiency is key. Saw that make a big difference at Nationals. The better it was, the better the players played. And so there you go. Those are my 9 double strategy lessons learned from Tri-Level Nationals. I'll repeat them for you. Number 1, deep ground strokes to set up partner for a volley. Number 2, the net player anticipating when to poach. Number 3, tennis is a game of errors. Number 4, first serve percentage. Number 5, adjusting formation/strategies. Number 6, not being tentative, playing fearlessly. Number 7, testing active net players down the line. Number 8, too big a swing on volleys. Don't do that. And 9 is footwork intensity and efficiency. So there you go. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. And, you know, just try to work on at least one of these. I'm sure at least one of these will help your game improve. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it and enjoy it myself if you would leave a review for the Tennis Files podcast, and you could do that at tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts with an S at the end, or through your favorite podcast app of choice that you use to listen to the show. We just find that Apple Podcasts is the biggest mover of the show in terms of visibility and rankings. But all I really care about is just the visibility part, where, you know, more individuals will be exposed to the show so they can learn and improve. Also want to leave you with a quote by Henry Ford, the vehicle maker. Henry said, "Obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off your goal." Love that. Very inspiring, motivational quote there. Got a fair amount of likes too on the Instagrams. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And like I mentioned, April 22nd to 27th is Tennis Summit 2024, my 8th iteration of the Tennis Summit, which is a free online tennis conference. And the registration page will be up fairly soon from today, from when this episode is published. I think in, math is hard, but I think in less than 2 weeks. So yeah, definitely exciting stuff. Got a really all-star lineup, and maybe working on getting a few more peeps on it as well. So I really hope you enjoy that one. It'll be, you know, technique, strategy, fitness, mental game. You can check out all the sessions and, you know, just learn from it. We'll also have quite a few live streams, which are super fun. We can take your questions, comments, concerns, etc., and we'll give out some prizes too during the live streams and free gifts and other stuff. So it'll be a blast. Definitely look for that. Really, the website will be tennisfilesummit.com, but right now it still has the previous year's one, so I wouldn't go there yet. I mean, you can go to like just check out generally what the vibe is, but the registration that signing up for this year's summit will be up, like I said, in less than a couple weeks. So with that, really appreciate you listening to this episode. Hope you learned something from it today. And the most important part is to go out there and execute what you have learned from the show and from others. So have a great one, and I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is your host, Mirban Aranchad, signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.